And we do Gaza Corner every Saturday night around 11 o'clock. And tonight I'm really pleased to have invited as a special guest Anthony Simon. Anthony Simon is a music, actually he's much more than just a music producer, but I met him at the WOMIX Music Conference, and it was a session actually about how music is impacted by war and genocide. And he was the one who spoke about Lebanon. He was born in London, lives in England still, but he's done a lot of traveling in between, raised in Lagos, Nigeria, developed his music career in Beirut, Lebanon. And since 2008, he, and I'll quote from the website, has developed and collaborated on some of the most influential projects in music, media, and marketing across Europe and the Middle East. And he co-founded a really cool concept, Beirut Jam Sessions, which is a music platform for the Middle East that produces concerts and original video content. And he's done it with some real core Tangents artists such as Ibrahim Malouf and Yasmin Hamdan, and maybe others as well. And welcome, Anthony. It's great to have you right here on Gaza Corner.
Well, thanks for having me. And I appreciate the time to speak at such an important time, I think. And it was really cool when we did meet at WOMIX a couple of weeks ago. Well, now it's over a month ago. But it was I think it was a really important conversation to have. And I think this one will be as well.
Absolutely. And thanks for getting up so early. I know it's like 7 o'clock. Well, now 7:07 in the morning, your time.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I certainly appreciate it. We will be doing both playing music that you've been involved with directly, as well as, I realize you're not a quote-unquote expert, but I think it's very important since you're so connected to Lebanon and obviously have a lot of friends and colleagues still there, to get your perspective on what's been happening and what is going on, and also provide, I think, some historical context is very important to really understand how Lebanon has gotten to where it is today. But first, let's deal with some music and the Beirut Jam Sessions. So explain what the Beirut Jam Sessions are, and also maybe a little bit about La Blogothèque.
So Beirut Jam Sessions is a platform I co-founded in 2012 with some friends. The initial idea was to bring over artists from around the world to perform in Lebanon and to have them collaborate with local artists via video content. So we would have them perform in random places across the country, completely unplugged, and they would improvise most of the time. So we've had moments like, you know, Joss Stone performing with Karim Khneiser, who's a Lebanese musician. We've had some artists play in a cable car, you know, that oversees the whole country. So we had different things. And for me, what was important in those videos was to show Lebanon in a way that wasn't being shown in the media. So that was the first initial idea. As things happened, you know, with first the economic crisis, then COVID, then the fact that I left the country, it's kind of evolved, but with the core message still being the same. If possible, we bring over artists from abroad to perform in Lebanon. If not, we push the local artists by organizing their concerts, but all the while filming these sessions that are completely unplugged and that are inspired entirely by La Blogothèque, which is a French platform that films videos in this unplugged one-shot format, which I'm a very big fan of. So this sort of stuff's been going on for 14 years now. In fact, sorry, 12 years now. And we even filmed a few just last week here in London of Lebanese artists. Initially, it was something I'd never been a fan of, you know, using Beirut Jam Sessions as something to fuel content or anything like that for Lebanon whilst in London. But given how many Lebanese artists have left London, it made sense to do stuff like that as well. So the idea will always be to showcase Lebanon, Lebanese artists, a collaboration between Lebanese artists and international ones. And it's all about kind of giving them their space to perform in a way that normally they wouldn't be doing.
And I imagine many of the artists are probably not very well known, but some of them are. And I think Ibrahim Maalouf is a star. Unfortunately, probably not a star in the United States yet. I keep wondering, when is he going to come to the States? Well, why don't venues understand that he is such a special artist? But you obviously have known Ibrahim a very long time. And I actually got to discover his music, I think it was 2011 maybe, when WOMEX, the conference that we met at, had Ibrahim Maalouf perform a performance. I forget what recording was coming out at that time. It may have been Diagnostic, I'm not sure. But when he performed his showcase, my jaw dropped. I was just, it doesn't happen a lot at WOMEX for me. I got to tell you, a lot of the showcases underwhelm me. Ibrahim Maalouf was over the top, incredible. And I met him after the show. He couldn't be more friendly. And I've been playing his music heavily ever since. Tell me your story with Ibrahim, and then let's play one of the videos that you produced with him.
Yeah, so Ibrahim is someone who left Lebanon, I believe, during the Civil War, or I'm not sure exactly in the timeline, but he left Lebanon at a young age and moved to France. And obviously, he's built his life over there. And his father was a great trumpetist as well. So, but obviously, nowhere near as known as he is. And with him, what happened was in 2014, he was coming over to Lebanon for a performance at a festival. And that was, I think, at the height of Ibrahim Maalouf's kind of rise. He had just won the equivalent to of a Grammy in France. And we reached out to him saying, "Hey, look, this is what we are. This is who we, this is what we do. And we would like to film one of these sessions with you." So if you go on our channel, you'll see, if you write Beirut Jam Sessions Ibrahim Maalouf on YouTube, there are two videos, one of which is our most popular video on the channel. And the funny thing with that video is him and his manager told us, "We only have 12 minutes to film this video." So as I mentioned earlier, these videos are done in a one-shot format. So it's, you really cannot mess up the take. And so my camera guy, who's my partner in the project, looked at me and basically said, "I've got this, don't worry." And it's a video that's really, it's so simple, so nice, but he performed that song, that one of his most famous songs called True Sorry, and it's a fantastic video. So after that, we kept in touch, obviously, sporadically, but he was always friendly whenever I reached out to him. I even, at some point in 2020, I worked with him on something for Deezer, because I worked with Deezer at some point. But then, post explosion in Lebanon, obviously.
You should explain and not assume people know.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. So yeah, following COVID in 2020, Lebanon was already going through its an economic crisis that's still ongoing. And then on August 4th, 2020, there was this massive explosion that rocked the city and kind of ripped through the entire city. And that's something as well. If you just, if you go on YouTube and write Beirut explosion 2020, you'll see this. It basically looks like a nuclear bomb dropped on Beirut. And when that happened, the city was devastated. We were all impacted. It was not an easy time for anyone, similarly to now. But at the time, I remember about a month and a bit into it, Ibrahim Maalouf was coming to Lebanon, and he was coming to Lebanon to perform for free at some small charity thing. And I reached out to him and I'm like, "Look, we'd like to film another video with you." All these years later, it was 6 years later. "However, we would like to do it in one of the areas that are impacted by the blast, so we can raise more awareness about what's just happened." And we found this house that was completely destroyed by the blast. And we walked into it, we looked at it, we got, kind of, we got like really a bit emotional looking at such a beautiful house which is in Jumeizah, which is at the heart of where the explosion happened. And he performed one of his songs, Hashish, that day. And in doing so, again, we highlighted a bit more the situation. We were able to, for us, it was the first time kind of getting ourselves back on our feet to have live music or any sort of music somewhere. And we released that in October 2020, so a couple of months after the explosion.
And there are a lot of articles at the Gaza Corner section of the Tangents playlist. Just go to tangents.com, and in the left-hand column is the link for the Tangents playlist. Scroll down, you'll see a lot of articles. I put a bunch of kind of, these are dated articles, but I thought they were really important for understanding a lot of what we'll be talking about, including the port explosion in 2020. For example, there's a piece that was in the New York Review from August of 2020 called Broken Glass, Blood and Anguish, Beirut After the Blast, meaning the port blast. And it's a personal account of the port explosion in Lebanon by Seema Jalani. It's really an incredible read. I don't know if there's a paywall or not, but it's there for you as a link. So I just want to bring that up, as well as many other articles there at the Gaza Corner section. And also, Anthony, you mentioned the how important Ibrahim's father is. And Songlines magazine, its cover, I have it in my hands, you can hear it,
Oh, cool.
is Ibrahim Maalouf is on the cover of Songlines magazine, a story written by Daniel Brown, who coincidentally was on Tangents live in the studio about 3 months ago or so. And what's really important about his father is that his father invented the quarter tone trumpet. It's
That's right.
a four valve trumpet. He invented it. And the new album is a tribute to his father. And there's a wonderful photo of Ibrahim Maalouf on the cover of Songlines magazine, and Songlines magazine is a media partner of Tangents. So let's get Hashish on, and then we'll come back on Gaza Corner. Our guest is Anthony Simon, and this is Ibrahim Maalouf on 91.7. I love the ambient noise, Anthony, that you included in the song, and actually in the beginning, which I actually did not include to start with the music, but at the end as well. And that is Hashish Ibrahim Malouf. And tell me about the guitar player, Francois Delporte.
So he's been performing with Ibrahim for quite a while, and they actually tour often together in the sense that they actually have gigs where it's just the two of them. So I believe he's been with them, I want to say since day one, but I'm not sure. But yeah, he was really nice as well. And even for him to turn up after that explosion when most people were being advised not to, as a Lebanese person, you can go back and that's fine. But as someone who's not Lebanese, to have turned up at that moment in time, was quite cool for us, So,
And there's another artist who I play a lot on Tangents who you also have a connection with and produced a video, and that's the former member of Soap Kills and really nice solo career, Yasmin Hamdan. Tell me about your experience with her.
yeah, Yasmin is a very special, very, very special artist who has had a huge impact on Lebanon. So I believe she left Lebanon, I want to say some point around the early mid 2000s, but she was part of Soap Kills, which was one of the first bands to emerge out of Lebanon following the 15-year civil war, which ended in 1990. So at that time, obviously, music was probably not a thing. I was obviously young at the time, but I wasn't living in Lebanon, So it was only years later I started realizing the impact that Soap Kills had. And Soap Kills were the, even when you listen to them now, if you check on Spotify or YouTube or wherever you listen your music, wherever you listen to your music, if you just write in Soap Kills and you listen to their stuff, you'll realize how ahead of its time it was. And she was the vocalist at the time. When the band separated, I'm not sure why or how or exactly when, but they both, her and Zayd Hamdan, who have no relation whatsoever, were the two members. But they both had great solo careers. And Yasmin is based in France now. In 2017, she was visiting Beirut. I reached out to her and asked if we could film a video of hers. We'd never had the chance to, and in that time, I was going through quite a rough period, but it felt like one of the most, how can I say, one of the most meaningful moments to me personally to have Yasmin Hamdan and to, kind of get out of a rut and have this session produced, So I hold her in very high esteem. I wish she could be performing more. I know that she kind of took a step back in 2018, 19 and hasn't performed since, but hopefully she will again sometime soon.
The lyrics for this are posted at the YouTube video site of this song, and you can just Google, I would imagine, Beirut Jam Session, Yasmin Hamdan, Beirut, which is the name of the song, and one of the paragraphs really tells you how Beirut. First, she talks about Beirut being, Beirut has a history of the 1960s. It was the Paris of the Mediterranean, the Paris of the Middle East. But then she, toward the end of the song, says, all unemployed, hopeless, ruined and rusted, jinxed and accursed, those dealers of Beirut.
Yeah, it's a great song. Honestly, whenever I listen to it, I get really like nostalgic because it's funny that that song, what was said in the song, and one, it's something I don't know how to explain it other than saying history repeats itself, and through music you can hear it in the lyrics of songs like that. What she was singing about, she was speaking about, that period in the middle in Lebanon when it was considered this, as you say, Paris of the Middle East and stuff like that. But we'll always have these moments where we think that our country is going through this magnificent spell of, culture and, life and opportunity, and then we get slapped in the face again, and then we have to rebuild, and then it happens again, and we rebuild, and it happens again, and it's this endless loop, and when I see Lebanon today, and I have my family there, I have my friends there, and I feel that it's only when you leave that you realize how much the country has been meddled with from outside. And it's such a shame, because Lebanon has so much opportunity. I'll always say it, but more importantly, I genuinely believe that the people in Lebanon, even the ones who might not be educated or the ones who might not have had the chance to do things they wanted to do, all have fantastic potential because we have this strange ability to adapt to things that are not quite normal. And that's something that when I've left the country and moved to different places, I've noticed that's not necessarily present in different countries, So when people talk about, like, I've had times in life when, people have interviewed me and they've asked me, oh, how do you work under pressure? And if you say this to any Lebanese person, you're like, okay, do you really want me to tell you what my definition of pressure is versus yours? So, and that's just, it's not coming from an arrogant place or a confident place. It's just coming from a circumstantial place where you're just like, we happen to be in a place where the definition of pressure is, all right, the basic norm is, like, oh, there's no electricity, or there's no internet connection, or if you want to fix something, you have to kind of pay your way into anything, and you have to fight for absolutely everything every single day. Whereas, and if you say that to someone who's based here in the UK, like, what's your definition of pressure? They'll talk about a deadline for a project. They'll be like, oh, we have, we had 10 projects happening at the same time. And we in Lebanon, and more, this applies to most countries in the region, we'll be like, yeah, we're working on XYZ while there was bombs happening left and right around us, and we had to kind of casually hold ourselves together. So it is a strange perspective. And this all goes back to something, when Yasmin sings songs like a song like that, and many of her songs, by the way, it shows that this is an endless loop. It's gonna keep happening, and we almost have to be, ready for the punches when they come in.
It's the voice of Anthony Simon, our guest on Gaza Corner, Lebanese music producer. And this is the song Beirut from Yasmin Hamdan from Beirut Jam Sessions.
شرب العرق لعب الورق خيل السبق صيد الحمام شرب العرق لعب الورق خيل السبق صيد الحمام رسم البيرون لبس الغيوان شم الهوى أكل الهوى شاغل عقول سكان بيرون بيروت زهرة في غير أوانها بيروت محلة محل زمنها بيروت يحنها ويعدي عنها تدبل ما في عمل ما في أمل برك الجمل ركب النحس ما في عمل ما في أمل برك الجمل ركب النحس تجار بيروت الغندرة والفنجرة والبحورة كتر البتر هالك بيروت بيروت زهرة في غير أوانها بيروت محلاها محل زمنها بيروت يحنها ويعدي عنها تدبل بيروت زهرة في غير أوانها بيروت محلاها محلى زمنها بيروت يحن
from the Beirut Jam Sessions, produced by our guest, Anthony Simon, Yasmin Hamdan on the vocal, Min Pham on piano, Cedric Leroux on guitar, lyrics by Omar Elzeni. The original version of Beirut is on her album, Yanas. What a production, Anthony. It wouldn't matter that I saw the lyrics translated, even if I didn't see the translation. That's about as moving as you can hear a human being sing a song.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And that video, if I put it into context for myself personally, I remember that year 2017. So we filmed that at the beginning of December, and that whole year and summer was a rough one for me personally. And I'd actually decided, I'd stopped producing any sessions or any concerts. You know, I needed my own time. And so this was kind of my own like return to coming back to working properly, you know. So it felt really moving that that was the one for me, you know, because she, without her knowing, obviously, but she had a huge role in that. So yeah.
You mentioned before we played the music that, in your words, there's an endless loop of really
Yeah.
disasters that happen to Lebanon, and you're always waiting for the next punch, is the word you used,
Yeah.
and how international powers have meddled in Lebanon to its detriment. I think it's really important for listeners to really understand how the creation of Lebanon, how its history, especially how the colonial powers, France, in this case, divided the Ottoman map in a way that cut through ethnic and religious communities in how Lebanon was formed. I mean, there are 18 religious sects. It's one of the most diverse countries in terms of religion and ethnicity in the Middle East. But the way the sectarian power-sharing structure was created upon independence from France has not changed. It's resulted in a systemically weak and corrupt patronage-based system that really pits the sects against each other. So, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, what I'll say first in terms of the sects and in terms of politically, so Lebanon is a, as you mentioned, you know, it's got 18 different religious sects. But more importantly, when the three main religions in Lebanon, being the Christians, the Sunnites, and the Shiites, you know, they each have equal power in the government, which means your president has to be Christian. Your Speaker of Parliament has to be Shiite, and your Prime Minister has to be Sunnite, and they all have the same amount of power. It kind of becomes like a facade, you know. It's almost like they're there as, you know, I don't want to say anything other than, you know, they're almost like Muppets. Like they have no real say in what happens. So it's kind of it's Lebanon almost rides on auto control politically. So it's always dependent on external factors. You know, if something goes wrong, they need to speak to the French, they need to speak to the Americans, they need to speak to this, that, and the other. You know, and that's how it's always been. Now, I think the way I'm gonna explain it will maybe make I'm going to try and keep it as simple as possible, but the idea was basically, if I'm not mistaken in the dates and stuff like that, but roughly around so 1916 or so, that's when, so that's middle of World War One, which was 1914 to 1918. So in 1916, you had Sykes-Picot. There was a something called the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which kind of led to the division of the whole map of the Middle East, if you will, you know. And this was by two French diplomats, one French and one English diplomat. So Mark Sykes and François Georges Picot, who's French. And they decided how they were going to divide the map of the Middle East, be it, you know, Palestine, Lebanon, et cetera, Syria, and so on. And when that came into place, basically the Lebanon was under the French mandate. So they were controlling all of Lebanon. Similarly, the British were in control of Palestine and so on and so forth. And it was only 1943 that Lebanon became independent. And I say independent in between quotes here because I still think Lebanon is not independent. So when, as I've just mentioned, you know, we always end up looking for external power, which can then go into, we can go into the whole conversation of how, you know, I don't know, Hezbollah came to be through Iranian power and so on and so forth. But basically, Lebanon's never been given the chance to run on its own. And at this point, I don't know if it has the ability to run on its own because of all these internal, you know, different sects and different conflicts that have happened since its independence. Because from the moment it was independent, and I keep, whenever I say independent, I'm saying it in between quotes because, again, I don't think it's independent. So from 1943 till roughly 1975, this theory or myth that Lebanon was the Paris of the Middle East, And, people from all around used to come to Lebanon and, enjoy the beaches and enjoy the nightlife. And it was this beacon of hope and opportunity and this and that and the other. That's the myth we've been told for so long. And that's what's portrayed in the media. You can literally, if you Google Paris of the Middle East, the first thing that comes up is Beirut in the 1960s and 70s. Now, we don't know how true that is. Our parents tell us stuff like this. I don't know how much I believe it because I think that Lebanon works in phases, and you'll have 15 years where it's considered the Paris of the Middle East or the Switzerland of the Middle East. Then you have 15 years of absolute chaos. Then you have 15 years of, oh, it's on the rise again. Then you have 15 years of absolute chaos. So it works in phases. And currently, Lebanon is going through one of those phases and has been for, like, I want to say since 2019. And that basically, in terms of chronological order, to go back to the Paris of the Middle East part, in 1975, the civil war began in Lebanon and lasted these 15 years that I mentioned. And from then onward, it was a rebuilding process from 1990 till, 2005. And I put that period again because between 1990 and 2005, Syria had a strong presence in Lebanon. So Syria actually, their military had a, like, they were allowed to be in Lebanon. They had this, I don't want to say it was a proper occupation, but they were really, they intervened following and during the civil war. So it was in 2005 that they were kind of driven out of the country. And then Lebanon started again, a new wave of what people would call a new type of independence, which again isn't really independence. So it's very, I'm trying to do it in a timeline, but it's so, there's so many layers to this that I'm not exactly sure where or how to start. But yeah, I think that's kind of rough, the rough overview. And then since 2005 till now, it's just been one mess after the other.
Well, the 1960s was a period of calm, a rare period of calm, and I think that's, I mean, I can't, I wasn't an eyewitness to going to Beirut, but I do think it was, I think, I mean, I've only heard that it really was a jewel for that, brief decade.
Yeah, but like I and maybe it was because the thing is, it's very subjective because even now, I tell people that I'm very grateful that I lived in Lebanon for during this period to the, so I left in June 2021, but I tell people that between end of 2007 till 2018 was another period, another golden period for Lebanon. Like what I felt in that period of time was, so it almost feels like it couldn't be real. What we were doing was, it almost feels like it was really almost like a dream. When people would come to Lebanon, artists or whoever, they'll always be a bit amazed by the fact that, we're this sort of people who are always doing everything to the extreme. If we party, we party to the extreme. If we organize a gig, we organize it to the extreme. You always have either the best day in the world or the worst day in the world, and there's nothing in between, So it was this period that really felt surreal to me. And I think in time, history, we'll be speaking about this in a way, similar to how we've been speaking about the 60s and 70s, but we'll be talking about this golden era of the early 2010s in some way, I don't know how we can categorize it, but it is a period of like 2007-ish till 2018, 19, in my opinion, where we had another wave of this, again, hope, prosperity, opportunity, loads of expats coming back to the country to build something, to try something new. There's a wave of, optimism. And I do believe it's going to happen again, like maybe not now, but it will happen again soon. And when it happens, this is where you have to, I think, those who left the country, we have to understand whether or not we're going to trust that optimism, or we're going to trust that feeling that's coming to us that's saying, hey, you should go back home and, help the country and build something. That's, everyone's going to have that kind of connection towards the country, that feeling, that emotional duty that you want to help and whatever. But For me, like, it's a matter of trust, and I personally have lost trust in Lebanon, but I'll always do what I feel is necessary from abroad, and I use music as my tool for that.
That's the voice of Anthony Simon, our guest on Gaza Corner tonight, every Saturday night at 11 o'clock. I saw a stat which I think is correct, that from 1992 to 2019, 50%, 50% of Lebanese aged 20 to 50 have emigrated. That is an amazing brain drain.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, I heard a historian, a Lebanese historian, speaking about this in 2021, and he was saying that there were three different waves of what people call brain drains. One was right after World War I, the second was during the Civil War, and the third is now. And it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all if that number is correct. The thing is, with numbers in Lebanon, we don't know because we haven't had an official consensus, a population consensus in ages, because no one would like to admit which religious party has more people in the country than the other, because they want to share the they'll always say it's 50-50, whereas the reality is, at least in my opinion, it's definitely not 50-50. And the thing is, Lebanon is very sensitive, and Lebanese are very sensitive to these sort of things, so they're very careful not to do it. Especially as well, we've had Syrian refugees after their war in 2011, and Palestinian refugees, and it's just so hard for Lebanon to just ca like count, just do a population count, because it's practically impossible. Because the system in Lebanon is so flawed that they would not even consider refugees as people. That's how flawed it is. And that's why, as well, again, for me, those sort of things, I have strong opinions on those, in the sense that these are people who, for anyone who's fled their country, the difference between being called an expat, an immigrant, or a refugee is just the status that we assign it to. At the end of the day, you're a human being who has left your home to go somewhere safe because you do not want to die. That's the reality of it. And whatever title you put on that is based on your vision of the world and what politicians and the media and whatever want to put on that title, So, yeah.
I'm not sure there's a country in the world that has a greater percentage of refugees to the general population as Lebanon. I mean, 25% supposedly are refugees within a very small country where densely populated,
Yeah.
and really no tenable way of taking care of the refugees.
There's no way of taking care of it, because there's no government to take care of anything to start with. Meaning, as I said earlier, Lebanon is on autopilot, and one of the biggest examples is just now with what's been happening. No one spoke out. No one came up and did anything. No one helped the 1.2 million displaced people. It was the anything that was happening was citizen-led, meaning people took matters into their own hands. That's one thing I'll give Lebanon credit for, is we have this sort of weird responsibility where we're like, okay, something's wrong, we're gonna help. Whereas, it's, when I say we, I mean the people, just the general citizen of the country wants to help his fellow brother and sister. And this is something I haven't seen in many, many other places, but it's unbelievable, because that's what happens when you have incompetent politicians and a corrupt system, because it is a country, again, that's running on autopilot. There is no rule of law. It is the jungle. It is basically every man and woman for themselves. So at the end, you have situations like what just happened now in these past 2 months, and you look at it and you're like, how on earth has this happened? We're in 2024, and that's not to speak about, obviously, Gaza, which is on a complete another level of I don't even know what the word to use is, but it's just a lack of human compassion and humanity, or whatever you want to mention. But to see it happen as well in Lebanon, just while it's been happening in Gaza, is a bit surreal, because it all comes down to there's no one there to stand for us, so we have to stand for ourselves.
The ceasefire, which came into place this past Wednesday, I'm going to say ceasefire in quotes because it's already been violated by Israel, and the terms of it are so clearly unfair. And I can, give you a quick example. We have 7.5 minutes to go, so we're not nearly going to be able to cover all the material. We knew that going in, Anthony. We weren't going to be able to cover
Absolutely.
everything that we wanted to. But I do want your up-to-date perspective and those of your friends and colleagues, family members, whether they have more hope now, whether they're, very, just, skeptical about the ceasefire. And when I mentioned it being unfair, the United States could not put this in the agreement because the Lebanese government, as such, there's not even a president right now, by the way. I mean, we should mention, but not that it would matter. But anyway, the agreement apparently has an appendix that Biden wrote a letter that confirms that Israel has the right to do what it wants in Lebanon in the name of defense. And we already know that defense is a crazy word because Israel has justified everything it's done in its genocidal assault in Gaza in the name of self-defense, which is makes a mockery of the concept of self-defense. But it's already shot at Lebanese people trying to return to the south. It's already injured journalists covering the many thousands who are trying to return to their homes if their homes are still there. And also, Israel has already bombed post quote unquote ceasefire a Hezbollah weapons storage place. Now, no one even raises an eyebrow, but if Hezbollah shot in northern Israel and tried to destroy a weapons storage area, that would be huge headlines and proof of violating it. So there's an article that I linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. It's really a great read. The ceasefire in Lebanon is a ticking bomb. It's from Drop Site News, Jeremy Scahill and Sharif Abdul Qaddous. But for in the few minutes we have left, what are your feelings about whether the ceasefire will hold and what the pulse of the Lebanese people are in terms of what to expect next?
So from my within my circle of friends, family, and so on, everyone is just almost taking a breath in the fact that they just know that there's a relative period of calm for now. The key word being for now, because everyone knows that this ceasefire is a bit of a joke, as you've mentioned. Like I say, it's the same as giving someone who's broken his leg, giving them a Panadol to fix it. You're like, you've just broken your leg here, have a Panadol. Like that's basically what they're doing. The root cause of this and the source of this and what's going to happen next is basically now they're on pause. It's halftime, The second half is coming and we know it's coming with once Trump gets into office and these sort of things and these 60 days supposedly when the Israeli troops are going to gradually leave the south of Lebanon and so on and so forth. This is all again. It's a joke for me. Like in the past few days, we've seen how many times it's been violated, and the ceasefire has been violated, and no one will bat an eye. And I'm not saying this. It's violated. To be completely fair, it's violated both ways. Like it's not just violated by Israel. It's also violated by Hezbollah. For me, these are both of them are basically fighting a fight where the people who are paying the price are the citizens. They're the ones paying the price in this. At the end of the day, I just look at it and I'm like, this is not going anywhere. It's almost like they're giving us a chance to celebrate Christmas, basically. They're like, yeah, have your little month now. See your families, say Merry Christmas to each other. We're coming back. And you can feel it, you can see it, you can sense it. It's just there. And just earlier today, my friend was telling me he was hearing the drones again, you know. So the violation of Lebanese airspace has already been done. So it which is one of the terms in the ceasefire, to stop the violation of Lebanese airspace. But this happened in 2006. So we had a 1 month war as well, again, very similar to this. It was super intense. Definitely nowhere near as documented as what's just happened now. And yeah, it just within a month we were hearing Israeli planes all over again, you know. So there's no limit to this. It's just, as I said earlier, it's an endless loop. It keeps going round and round and round.
I think that Israel has been violating this, you know, the sovereign airspace of Lebanon for decades and decades and decades.
It almost they know more about our land and what's where everyone is based than we do. And this go this is the and it's not this is not to praise them in any way, shape, or form, but if they are capable of targeting certain people while they're sitting in their kitchens, and they've done it before, specific people, then it basically shows how completely how they have no sense of humanity or that or anything when they level buildings to the ground. You know, if you're capable of targeting a specific person who you're looking for while they're driving or while they're in their kitchen or whatever, but then sometimes you want to target someone else, but you eliminate entire buildings or neighborhoods or whatever it is, it kind of tells you the intent they have. The intent is very, very clear, you know, like, they're not here to. They'll say things where they're like, "Oh, we're the most moral army in the world, and we do this and we do that," but then you see them literally level entire towns and buildings and neighborhoods to the ground, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we were trying to cat. We got this guy, but in the process, we killed 300 other people. But that's fine. Collateral damage, you know." So, yeah, it's again, it's surreal. What they do is completely surreal, and nobody knows when this is gonna when or how this is gonna end, or what the next phase will be. But I think right now is half time. There's a second half coming.
That's the voice of Anthony Simon. We're going to have to leave it there. This is KALW San Francisco Bay Area. Anthony, thank you so very, very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.